It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It is a minute and a half past the hour. Oh, damn it. Time check. No more. And this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us. That, of course, is the home of, well, it's easy to get my Twitter feed there, and it's easy to get into the wacky, merry, madcap, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. If you run over to HeadOn.live, well, right there, and jump in the chat room, click on the chat room tab. You'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Jimmy and Squeaky and BT Blom. More to come as the program continues its merry way on this final day of February 2019. Goodbye, February. Goodbye. Yes, yes. And so for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, we begin to look towards spring. And if you jump in, they'll greet you, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, and the storm having passed and the cabin fever having gone, has elected to fold space to become man caved. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Sand. So I'd say that we're pretty much. Rare and ready to go, and they're waiting for you there in the chat room. We have thanks to send out on this final day of February. Thanks very kindly indeed to Sharon. Thank you very much for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to Philip for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to Randy and PA for being a partial sponsor of the program, and to Charlene in Rogues Island for being a partial sponsor of the program, and all of you subscribers for the month for having made possible 4 days of fundraising-free radio. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Thanks as well going out on this final day of February to our Patreon subscribers, who are, in no particular order, Vernon in San Diego, Hung Like Jesus down in Georgia. Thank you to Tina. Thank you to Tina in Maryland. Thank you to Otto out in Oregon. Thank you to Thomas, and thanks as well to the Nubian there in California. Wait, there are more. Thanks to Susan. And thanks to Stephen in Wisconsin. Thank you to Steve in New York. Thank you very kindly to Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you to Sonny. Thank you to Rocky. Thank you, Rocky, very kindly. Thank you to Robin. Thanks as well to Rico, our buddy Rico. Thank you to Rhonda. Thank you to Ron. Thanks, Ron, in Delaware. Thank you very kindly to Nick in Ohio, to Michael. Thank you, Michael. Thank you to Matthew there in Humboldt County. Thank you to Marty. Thanks to a different Marty Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Peggy in the sandbox. Thanks to Kimberly in North Carolina. Thanks to Kat. Thanks to Carl in Texas. Thank you to Karen in California. Thank you to Joyce. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to John in Wisconsin and to Johannes in Colorado. Thank you to an altogether different John. Thank you, John. Thank you to John in Maryland. And thank you to Jim in California. Thanks to Jeremy in Vermont and to Jason. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to John. Thank you, different John. Thanks to our buddy Horst in Taiwan. Thank you to Hamilton in Texas. Thanks to Greg. Thank you, Greg, very kindly. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you very much to Frank. Thanks to Foam Cups in Oregon. Thank you to Irwin. Thank you to Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan. Yes. Thank you to David. And thank you to a different David. Thanks as well to Brendan. Thanks to Barb in PA. Thank you to Barb in Minnesota. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. And thanks to Andy the Angry Jew. Thanks to Alex in Kentucky. Thank you to Alec in Oregon. And thank you very kindly to Albert in North Carolina. Thanks one and all for being subscribers over at Patreon. Taken all together, our subscribers knock out about a week's worth of the programming here. And I can never say thank you enough. So, with the thanks having been delivered, we find ourselves ending February on a Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means that, and this is not fundraising for this evening, I'm not cheating, but people ask me, hey, Bob, is there a challenge that I can participate in? Well, the first of the month will be tomorrow, Friday on the front porch, and Shirley's Memorial Challenge will be on the table to the tune of $200. So anybody wanting to jump in on a challenge, that's tomorrow, okay? So it's a chance to double your money up to $200. So if you're thinking along those lines, that's a great guaranteed opportunity each and every month. Did I do the high on Bob Kincaid part? Because I am. Well, Bob Kincaid, not high. I've promised for years that I will not do impaired radio because, well, that's for the right wing, not us. So, yeah, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it's weird, but as far as Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to the right-wing stupid people who really go above and beyond to display their white-wing stupidity. And, wow. After the time that we spent yesterday with the Cohen testimony, it's almost like they were lining up behind him. God almighty. But before we jump into that, a note from Steve in New York. Subject line, Michael Cohen testimony. I was listening to something today on MSNBC about the hearing. They spoke about the code that Trump used. One of the commentators made the point that in doing what Trump did, he gave himself some sort of plausible deniability. Sam Nunberg confirmed that this code existed in the way Trump communicates with his mafiosi. Then it occurred to me that this is exactly what Comey testified to. Presumably Comey didn't know the code. However, Comey indicated that Trump would say things about Flynn such as, he's a good guy, or I hope this investigation exonerates him, or I really hope this goes away soon. Those aren't direct quotations, I understand, but it gets the point across that Cohen and Nunberg, probably without realizing it, completely confirmed what Comey testified to, and that Comey was right in interpreting what Trump was saying, notwithstanding the gophers, G-O-P-H-E-Rs, who tried to say things like, gee, I really hope Flynn is exonerated, was nothing more than aspirational as opposed to directional. Things, Steve observes, are starting to show a confirmable, consistent pattern. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And it is, it's a disturbing pattern. And I'm not at all comfortable saying that anything is really going to come of the Cohen testimony. However, we do know that he's going to come back. He has been called back, apparently, after meeting with, I think, Adam Schiff's committee today in a closed-door session. He will return on March the 6th. Interviewed outside the Intelligence Committee room, he said that the House Intel Committee is looking for more information, and he'll be coming back on March 6th. So that makes at 1 day in the Senate and 2 days in the House he's spent testifying, and they still want to know more. Well, you know, I want to know more, too. Because with 24 hours to sort of cogitate on this stuff, it occurred to me that, well, you know, there was there was one little passage where he talked about the dim sun and the him setting up the meeting over the WikiLeaks release, and but it's the questions that don't get asked that you think about later. It's kind of like being in an argument with somebody, and you always think about the perfect comeback 20 minutes after the argument's over and everybody's gone, and you're like, oh, why didn't I say that? Well, there were questions asked about the DNC WikiLeaks dump. Nobody asked, God knows, not the Republicans. Why? Because they already know. I know that's a little paranoid. That's a little Alex Jonesy, but I think there's reason to put credibility credence in the in this notion. They already know what happened to the Republican the hacked Republican emails, because they're presently being used against them. But nobody asked, hey, what about, you know, we seem to have so easily forgotten, but WikiLeaks got hold of, because Russia hacked them, Russia hacked the DNC server and gave the stuff to WikiLeaks. But Russia also hacked the RNC server, and nothing was ever heard about that again. So maybe, hey, Michael, do you know anything about maybe the RNC emails? Was ever anything said about that right there? Hey, yeah? That wasn't asked. The other thing that occurred to me was not asked. Remember when he was talking about, you know, that's a lovely tie, isn't it? And what are you going to do, argue with him? Well, that kind of made me wonder what he said in the car when Julius Geezer looked at him and said, "Michael, can you think of any country run by a black person that isn't a shithole country?" Back when Barack Obama was a black person being president of the United States, nobody asked him, "What did you say back, Michael?" Or when he was in Chicago and Julius Geezer said, "Only the blacks could live like this." What did you say back, Michael? Yeah, yeah. Because, see, there was an interview earlier today CNN interviewed a woman named Barbara Rez, R-E-S. Race, Rez, What matters is that she is a former Trump Organization vice president. And apparently vice president of the Trump Organization doesn't mean much unless, you know, you've got your hands on the money or your last name is Trump or your last name was, you were born with the last name of Trump. Thinking there about darling Ivanka, you were great. It's you. CNN interviewed Barbara Rez about her time with the Trump Organization. And she tried to, I guess, provide a little bit of cover for the racism part of Donald Trump as a racist, a con man and a liar, or a con man and a cheat, whatever it was. She was talking to Brooke Baldwin at CNN, and this transpired.
But threatening to sue was a definitely big deal. He threatened to sue everybody.
How about this whole conversation that's been going on over whether or not Donald Trump is racist? Cohen said he is, recalling an incident when Obama was president.
Did you catch that one little grunt about whether Donald Trump is racist? Let's go back real quick. Whether he's racist. And this full-grown woman merely goes,
And that's been going on over whether or not Donald Trump is racist. Cohen said he is, recalling an incident when Obama was president in which Trump said black people would never vote for him because, quote, they were too stupid. Cohen pointed out that there are no black executives at the Trump Organization. Is Donald, you've known Donald Trump off and on for years and years. What's true?
It's hard for me to say he's a racist and then admit that I worked for him for all that time. I mean, it was a different period of time.
Not a good look. It's hard for me to say that he's a racist and then admit I worked for him for all that time. It was a different period of time, huh? Let's say this portion of the conversation started out with its foot in a bucket and then tried to get the bucket into her mouth.
And words like the M-word were used frequently. They aren't ever used now.
By Donald Trump himself?
Well, I don't remember, to be honest. I won't say that he did because I don't remember. I remember hearing jokes. There were always black jokes going back and forth, and he told them too. You know the expression, once you go black, you never go back. First time in my life I heard it. It was Donald that said it.
So she doesn't know if he used that particular word, but everybody in the Trump Organization was all the time telling black jokes. You know how it was. You know that phrase. If you go black, you never go back. The first time I heard that, it was from Donald. Because, you know, back then, everybody told those kinds of jokes. I mean, everybody just did. Everybody. I mean, it was everywhere. You walk into Macy's and somebody's there telling a black joke. It was a different time. Bullshit. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. You know who the everybody is who told those jokes? Come on. Help a little help here. Sure.
I mean, it was a different period of time, and words like the M-word were used frequently. They aren't ever used now.
By Donald Trump himself?
Well, I don't remember, to be honest. I won't say that he did because I don't remember. I remember hearing jokes. There were always black jokes going back and forth, and he told them, too. You know the expression, once you go black, you never go back. First time in my life I heard it. It was Donald that said it. And in a joking way. So, I mean, there was certainly a...
Yeah, as long as it was in a joking way, I mean, sure. Watchy. Hey, did you know, once you... No, never. Did that make it into All in the Family? And All in the Family was terribly, terribly edgy, wasn't it?
Lightheartedness about not only black people, but Jews and things like that.
Yeah, lightheartedness about black people and Jews and, words matter here, things like that. Black people and Jews... are, and I just want to be clear here, I'm not saying it, the lady who used to be a vice president for the Trump Organization. She says it. Black people and Jews and things like that.
First time in my life I heard it. It was Donald that said it. And in a joking way. So, I mean, there was certainly a lightheartedness about not only black people, but Jews and things like that. But I remember we were picketed by...
Hang on.
Yeah, see, it does the same thing to Brooke Baldwin that it did to me. Hey, but hang on. Wait a minute. What, Edith, huh?
Still letting that sit for a second. So no one in the room, when Donald Trump or others would make these inappropriate jokes, would say, sir, not appropriate.
People did.
Inappropriate, Brooke? You can't say racist? Is that a forbidden word at CNN? Inappropriate jokes? Inappropriate jokes are telling little Johnny jokes at a dinner with white tablecloths and place settings, and you know, so, you know, you're sitting at the table and you wrecked them, damn near killed them. Ah, that's inappropriate. What we're talking here about here is, you know, racism. It's just because, well, you know, blacks, Jews, things like that.
Didn't do it at that time. Everybody joked. And people, I mean, I'm going to be honest about it. People left it. This was 1981, 82, sure. 83. And that's almost 40 years ago. And people sort of left. They left at Polish jokes. And
yeah, wait a minute. This is the fucking Megyn Kelly defense, isn't it? I had no idea that blackface was wrong when I was a child growing up in the 1970s. Well, if you didn't, somebody was raising you wrong. And if this woman didn't know that those were inappropriate in the early 1980s, yeah, we're not talking about the early 1880s and the rise of Jim Crow and the resistance to the, you know, the resistance to Reconstruction. We're talking about the 1980s. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, it is the 1980s. And it's not the rise of the Klan. It's the rise of Ronald Reagan's Republican Party. Son of a gun! Well, okay, they are a lot like the Klan. Yeah, Robert and Morgantown. Robert's on top of it. The 70s were not that different than today. Robert pointing out Howard Cosell and Jimmy the Greek would disagree. I should say so.
By the way, they weren't as mean intended back then. It was more or less kind of like racism was like accepted. It wasn't like, oh, I hate black people. It's just this is the way people are and this is the way we talk.
And this is a woman saying this about the early 1980s, and she's sitting in 2019. And this is why we've got so much work yet to do. This is why children still have to be, you have to overtly teach that that word ain't okay. And for parents of small children in 2019, it's probably more difficult than it was for parents of children in, say, 1987. Or, okay, let's say 84. Okay, 81. 79. Because you didn't have pop culture awash in a different pronunciation of that particular word. So that little kids pick it up from music that they hear. I'm trying to think, 1979. You know, 16 years old. I can think, and other musically and pop musically, pop culturally inclined members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will maybe think of others, but I can only think of one song using that word, and it's a John Lennon song. Mm-hmm. But in 2019... no end of the songs that, you know, little Johnny and little Sally may come home from school humming or singing. or using that word to refer to their best friend. I don't know how this woman managed. I don't know under what circumstances Barbara Rez left the Trump Organization. She sounds like she's still reasonably well intended toward Julius Geezer. And in her own words, it's hard for me to say he's racist, being that I worked for him all that time. It was a different period of time, and words like the N-word were used frequently by racists. Because if I, and I don't want to put too fine a point on this, if I was raised by hillbilly parents in Northwest Alabama, and I was taught that that was a word not to be used because my hillbilly parents, who were raised in the hollers of West Virginia in a coal camp where there were also families of color, and they were taught not to use that word. How is it that the hillbillies turn out to have been so much more advanced than, you know, the cosmopolitan residents of Gotham? How is that? How is it that the grandson and son of coal miners who worked each and every day in the mines alongside African-American men can be more advanced than somebody who lives in the greatest city ever conceived by the mind of man on earth? How is that? How can that couple, that humble Appalachian couple that flees this place as the economy collapses around them, and he takes a job on a silicon furnace in Northwest Alabama, and works alongside furnace operators there, again, African American, making the same money he's making the same money they're making, and he and his wife can teach a family not to use that word, but a billionaire family from Jamaica, Queens, runs an organization in which this woman explains that the word was used almost every day, all day, and that there were jokes about the Jews and the blacks and I'm sure everybody else came in for it too. But I really would like to know how that happens. Yeah, okay, Flavio's with the program. Quote, inappropriate things like that. Flavio says, like dead baby jokes? Yes, like dead baby jokes. Or maybe telling Helen Keller jokes at Ivy Green, her birthplace. Like that. That's inappropriate. The other sort is just plain racist. Monique, growing up in New York, said, I never used the word cracker. Racism is taught. These bastards do nothing but feel better saying it. It's like an orgasm for them. Precisely. Precisely. But that might give you an idea of what Thorn in the Side Thursday is going to be kind of like. Let's leave, then, the highly cultured concrete canyons of Gotham and run out to the vast and arid desert wastes of Arizona, shall we? Yeah, I know. Monique just sent a single word. Tiredness. Because it is. It's exhausting. I mean, it's exhausting for me, you're going to get in trouble, Bob. But I think it's so soul-searingly exhausting in part because it's enough to make you think that we're not getting anywhere. That we're in a rear-wheel drive vehicle with no positive traction. And that one wheel is just a spinning in the mud and chewing deeper into the goo. And not only are we not going anywhere, we're getting deeper into where we are. And that is exhausting. So anyway, out to the vast and arid desert wastes of Arizona, where recently the governor of that state, who happens to be a Republican, is a guy named Doug Ducey. No relation to Steve, I don't think. Jesus, I hope. But yesterday, at least with his own party, he plumb stepped in it. Because yesterday he made an announcement that he, Governor Doug Ducey, Republican of the vast and arid desert wastes of Arizona, said he was, quote, pro-vaccination and anti-measles. Pro-vaccination and anti-measles. Anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation got a problem saying they're pro-vaccination and anti-measles? God, I hope not. Measles was almost, if not completely gone in the United States, but it's not gone anymore because of an uptick. And by the way, there's been research done. Guess who fostered the uptick in anti-vaxxerism? Yes, 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 our dear friends over in Mother Russia. Because any inflection point that they can get onto where they can drive a wedge and make America hurt just a little bit more, they're up for. Oh, and hey, guess what? We thought we had polio licked, too. There were 29 cases of polio reported in 2018. And the reason that that children have a greater chance of getting the measles and, yes, polio, is because of parents who refuse to vaccinate their children. Because, you know, not that I want a fucking cookie or anything, but I have been saying for years, what? Yes? That our fetishization of the First Amendment's guarantee of freedom of religion will be the end of us. And if not the end, a great deal of pain and agony to us. Because there are states that allow parents to say, no, I don't want my baby to get no vaccines because Jesus. I mean, there are even Supreme Court cases that allow Jehovah's Witnesses to let their babies die rather than have them get a blood transfusion. That is a fetishization of the First Amendment's guarantee of religious freedom. And we have states that say, no, 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 no. If your religion says that you shouldn't get your children vaccinated, if your religion says that you need to be able to pass deadly infectious diseases to other people who don't share your stupid fucking religion, well, you go right ahead, because religious freedom. Yeah. So back to Doug Ducey, governor of the vast and arid desert waste of Arizona, saying he was pro-vaccination and anti-measles. This got other Republicans in high dudgeon. And probably some extreme far-left alleged progressives. Because Jill Stein. Enter Arizona State Representative Kelly Townsend, who jumped on Facebook after Governor Ducey said that he was pro-vaccination and anti-measles, and said, our country is sovereign. Good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, maggot, Christian, right? Yes, just making sure. Hey, Bob, why aren't you talking about Trump and North Korea? Because everybody else has. Representative Kelly Townsend, and she's just a lovely blonde lady, at least according to her Facebook photo. Our country is sovereign. Our state is sovereign. Our family is sovereign. Our God is sovereign. And the most holy and sacred last frontier of sovereignty is our own body. You might want the hockey puck for this, now that I think about it. You really might. Remember how I mentioned, you know, Mother Russia having a hand in all this silly shit? They know better than we know what pushes some people's buttons. Dearest friends and people of Arizona, it seems we are prepared to give up our liberty, the very sovereignty of our body, because of measles. I read yesterday that the idea is being floated that if not enough people get vaccinated, then we're going to force them to. The idea that we force someone to give up their liberty for the sit liberty, sit. We force them to give up their liberty for the sake of the collective is not based on American values, but rather communist. I have sworn an oath to the Constitution 5 times now, and I take that oath very seriously. It was not just something I repeated in order to get sworn into an office. I do not make my decisions based on my next election or what the populace demands if it violates that oath. I can't make my decisions based on anything that I think, because I can't think. I'm a maggot Republican. I added that part. Folks, I'm going to ask you to educate your children, educate your family, educate those around you about the fundamentals of liberty. Sit, liberty, sit! Roll over! And what that means. It seems we have lost those fundamentals along the way and are chasing our fears. No, you silly twit, our fears are catching up with us. Don't know much about polio, do you there, Kelly? Or what measles can do to a child in the womb, or a newborn, or even a 5 or 6 year old, or an old person. And finally, I am going to demand, as a mother of an injured child from her vaccines, liar, didn't happen,
that we insist that we spend the time and money on discovering what in these vaccines is causing so much injury.
Only it isn't.
Instead of insisting on taking your liberty, sit.
Beg, liberty, beg.
In the name of the collective. Benjamin Franklin once said,
now there's a certain delicious amount of irony in this. I mean, this is lightning bolt out of the sky irony. I mean, this is a, she's citing to Benjamin Franklin, lightning bolt key, you know, kite, that Ben Franklin, America's first great scientist, the closest thing that America has ever produced to, a Leonardo type.
As Benjamin Franklin once said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Live free or die, motherfuckers, Representative Kelly Townsend.
Okay, I added the motherfuckers part. It seemed like it just kind of belonged. Yeah, like Monique said, it's exhausting. To be clear, there is no peer-reviewed science that supports her idea that somehow or another her child was injured by a vaccine. I mean, maybe if the needle was rusty and she got fucking tetanus, okay, that I can see. Nothing else, though. It ain't there. But because this program has sort of a reputation for turning things on an edge and seeing things from different angles, I'm gonna hazard a guess here. I'm gonna guess that Representative Kelly Townsend has an autistic child. And you find a lot of these weird-ass anti-vaxxers among the parents of autistic children. Because they have been given an out, if you will. They've been given a convenient and candy-like explanation. Candy-like, I say, because it's satisfying to them in the short term. That lets them stop asking questions about why their child isn't as perfect as they want their child to be, and why their child isn't the little uber-kinder that their religion told them that child would be. Because all of these anti-vaxxers who always bring up autism give themselves away in one sense. They're saying essentially that they would rather have their child die of a preventable childhood disease than be autistic. And that is some sick, sick shit. The state of Florida recently became the first state in the union whose bar association licensed an autistic person to practice law. That was a big day, especially in light of the fact that the state of Florida has licensed the likes of Matt Gaetz to practice law. Oh, by the way, Matt Gaetz was overheard on a phone call with Donald Trump in Hanoi, telling him what a good job he did sending out that intimidating hit tweet on Michael Cohen, and Getz was overheard to say, "Happy to help, Mr. President, anytime." Back to this anti-vaxxer twit. What kind of sad, sorry, sick brain do you have to have? To put a concept, a freighted Republican concept, not liberty generally, not the liberty that was talked about during the European Enlightenment of the 18th century, but Republican liberty, you know, the freedom to pollute anything you want to pollute, the freedom to, shit in your neighbor's rain barrel and piss in it and puke in it, that kind of liberty. What kind of, because see, that feels like a lot worse disease, that Republican liberty fetish, where liberty isn't the freedom to live in a happy, functional community, but is instead some sort of twisted freedom to live in a Haiti with cable sort of hellscape. Because small government conservatism. Right. Brother Deacon Asa points out, our body is sovereign, our family is sovereign. Hey, don't pay that car payment for a few months and see how sovereign your family really is. Mm-hmm. Don't pay that power bill. See how sovereign you are out there in the vast and arid desert wasteland of Arizona. Yeah. And see, there's no cognitive dissonance whatsoever in the Republican mind of, say, a Kelly Townsend. Because at the same time that she can hoot about liberty over vaccines that she doesn't even understand, she can at one and the same time declare that that small government she raves about should at least be, you know, big enough to control a woman's body and a woman's choices about when and if to have children. And we've had measles outbreaks in various, in North Carolina, Washington, Oregon, Texas. And it's not just a simple childhood disease like the sniffles, like the anti-vaxxers would have you believe. Shit can kill. But don't anybody tell good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexual, maggot Republican Kelly Townsend about that. Jesus, the stupid. I mean, damn. Flavio says, fuck anti-vaxxers, religious freedom. I had, 1, mumps, 2, measles, 3, chickenpox, 4, possibly rubella. So I am perhaps blind and partially deaf today because of all the nice immunizations I got, because they didn't have those vaccines in Brazil in the 1960s. Thank God they had the polio vaccine. Flavio says, I was in bed most of my childhood. Fuck those people. Well, amen, Flavio. Because I had mumps, and I defied the odds. I had mumps 3 times.
Once on one side, once on the other. I didn't get the immunity and got it a third time on both. I had measles and chicken pox within weeks of each other in second grade. Second grade really sucked. And I remember how desperately sick I was. When we showed up at the doctor's office with the measles, the doc looked at me and said, "Well, it says, yeah, he got his measles vaccine, but hey, yeah, I just got this bulletin here. It didn't work." Sometimes vaccines don't work, but it's a matter of mathematics and statistics and herd immunity. I only got the measles because somebody else got the measles. That's the way contagious disease works. And now, a significant portion of one of the two major political parties is so desperately opposed to science that they would put children incapable of choosing for themselves, at risk. When, just to be sure, to make sure we put, when they constantly declare how much they love them some babies, but they only love the babies while the babies are still in the womb and they can use the babies to control the mommy. Because we are clear on that, aren't we? Because that's all there is to it. There is no moral stance associated with the right-wing assault on science. Oh, by the way, because PayPal handles the subscriptions so bizarrely, I need to send out thanks to our buddy Smitty in Florida. Your subscription just landed. So thanks, Smitty. Thanks a ton. And if you don't hear your name on the subscription list, that's why. Used to all happen right first thing in the morning. Now it just sort of they just sort of wander in over the course of the day. Thanks, Smitty. Thanks. Oh, and by the way, thanks to Michael and Madison a couple of nights ago because his came in about midnight or so. And it's not y'all, it's PayPal. They probably figured out that there's some money to be made that way. Sheesh. So we begin to get an idea of just what kind of a thorn in the side Thursday we're looking at here. Washington, D.C. and the area across the harbor in Maryland will probably have to be fumigated starting, late Sunday, Monday. Because that thing that happens about this time every year called CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, that is a magnet to all forms of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpansies, libertarians, evangelicals, etc. It's going on. Hosted and organized by Matt Schlapp. You might recall he's the guy who got up and walked out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner a couple of years ago, complaining about the elites making fun of Trump when this fucker's a millionaire. Yeah. Well, of course, their rallying cry is, as noted, the precious little fetuses. The fetuses. Yeah. And so I guess they were having a hard time getting talent for it. So they invited a guy who recently got his ass handed to him in his reelection bid, Snot Walker of Wisconsin, to speak, if that's what you can call what happens when Scott Walker opens his mouth and various grunts and clicks emerge from his pie hole. Speaking. And the fetus fetish is strong with this one. Oh, mercy.
How important it is today, more than ever, to stand up for the protection of innocent life, particularly when we see the kind of threat. And by the way, it's not live birth abortion. It's not infanticide. It is murder. If you take the baby home and kill the baby at home, it's murder. The same thing's true at the hospital.
You do not have to kill the baby here. You can take the baby home and kill it later. Kill it now. Kill it later. Kill it now. Kill it later. He does not have to. He does not have to take me home and kill me later. He can kill me now. And I say, kill me now. Bang. Jesus Christ! They're a fucking. They're a Daffy Duck Bugs. But oh my God. Oh, hell. Let me go back to the measles business for a minute. Hung Like Jesus tells me they're having a measles outbreak up in Vancouver, and the common belief is that Chinese immigrants are bringing it in. Oh, shit. That's not going to work out well. And we need to back up for a minute, too, before we go any further with take the baby home and kill it later, Scott Walker. These people. No liquor in them. These people. I want to go back to a note that came in from Steve in New York. Racism way back in 1978. You know what, says Steve? This is really strange that I've not thought about this in over 40 years, but it really just came back to me. I remember an incident when I was in first grade. I was in class when one of my black classmates, a girl, came sobbing to my first grade teacher, Mrs. Heckman, and when my teacher asked her what was wrong, she responded, George called me a, that word. I remember Mrs. Heckman absolutely lit into George, and yes, I can remember George's and the girl's name. I won't reproduce them here. At the top of her lungs. I know. I had teachers like that too. Because I was, I think my first grade class, we didn't have paid for kindergarten. We didn't have public kindergarten back then. But my first grade class was, if not the first, maybe the second in Alabama to be fully integrated from the very beginning. And I had teachers who were hell-bent that they were going to turn those little red clay white heathens into human beings. And then, of course, that was 1970, 69, 70. Reagan comes in on January the 20th, 1981, and the whole country goes to fuck all. So let's... Scott in San Diego. Oh, come on, Bob. What's a little lighthearted bigotry between corporate executives? Haw, haw, haw. Scott also adds, help me, Bob. Help me up, Bob. I'm so tired. We got a twofer this week. First, the shrieking GOP House members who tried and failed to trip up or malign Michael Cohen. Then the orange dealmaker himself, Donald Trump, who trudged dejectedly and slump-shouldered up the stairs to board Air Force One. Are we tired of winning yet? Good Lord. I'm just exhausted, says Scott. Ah, come on, Bob, says Darlene in Connecticut, with your sniffs there. Cohen testified that Trump doesn't do controlled substances. Really? Well, if you go back, you'll find that that was framed in the "Are you aware if" format. The answer was no, he's not aware. This is not the same thing as saying that Donald Trump does rails of crushed Adderall longer than his own not particularly long arm. Yeah. But no, you heard that right. Scott Walker says that, I guess, liberal Democratic women don't want to just have an abortion there, one of those recreational abortions there. No, they want to go ahead and have the baby because having that baby's so damn much fun. Push, push. Okay, we're going to kill it in a minute. Push. Okay, here's your baby. Take it home and murder it. Murder it? We're going to bake it. We're going to barbecue it. Mmm, what is this? Tastes delicious. Baby? Baby what? Baby. And, of course, the maggots that show up for your CPAC just clap and yell and they weep and they cry and they think about the precious little fetuses. Although not one of them would ever adopt one if their lives depended on it. Of course not.
Particularly when we see the kind of threat. And by the way, it's not live birth abortion. It's not infanticide. It is murder. If you take the baby home and kill the baby at home, it's murder. It's the same thing's true at the hospital.
Must have had to get up early to come see Snot Walker, or as I like to think of him, Walking Snot, because that ovation was a little tepid, wasn't it? But that's the word of the day in Republican world. Infanticide. Even though it isn't. Remotely. Not even a little bit. Mm-mm. Jesus, these people. It's a particularly thorn in the side. Thursday. Well, Monique asks, when do we blame the voters, Bob? I'm good when you are. I kind of been blaming them all along. I know I'm damn sure not responsible for putting those assholes in Congress. Hell. That's like that idiot Carol Miller yesterday from West Virginia in the hearing. I most assuredly did not vote for that horrible woman. I make it a point not to vote for stupid people. I voted for the guy who lost to her by 13 points. I voted for the guy who lost to her by 13 points, who declared to anyone back in 2016 who would listen that, well, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a voting for Trump. Mm-hmm. And then was totally surprised when maybe people were a little bit less than enthusiastic about him in 2018, at least Democrats, because he had done what they didn't, i.e. voted for Donald fucking Trump. But that's what you get these days. Because we are living in a time of monumental stupid. But it is Thursday. It's the final Thursday of February 2019. And that means, of course, that we have available to us the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We'll have some more filibobster in a minute, or load up the phone lines. Well, there's two of them, if you so choose. Toll-free 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, or 304-574-8178, and Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Those last two are one and the same, more or less. And we'll see what's on your mind as well. But for now, yeah, let's see what's on Brad and Desi's.
It's Thursday, February 28, 2019.
So summer in February, apparently it's hotter than Mexico.
Britain basks in warmest February ever recorded. House Democrats unleash wave of oversight on climate, energy, and the environment. A turning point for solar power in Arizona. Plus,
there are big issues, and I think Republicans feel like the nation is shifting, the electorate is shifting, and they have to come up with an answer that's more than don't know, don't believe it, it's something else that's going on.
Republicans begin shifting away from outright climate change denial.
All of those shifty characters and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Half of Americans say the science is more convincing than it was 5 years ago, which is f***ing stupid, but I'll take it.
Taking whatever we can get right now, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I love listening to some of those reports out of Great Britain talking about what a lovely day it is today.
Yes, the British are enjoying their hottest February weather on record
but
this week.
But maybe they shouldn't be enjoying it quite so much.
Well, you know, it's nearly 70 degrees in London, and that's pretty summer-like weather. And it did break the all-time high February temperature ever recorded in hundreds of years of record-keeping. The summer-like weather comes exactly 1 year to the day after Britain was slammed with record cold and snow in that so-called Beast from the East storm. The UK is now headed to its warmest February on record.
It's almost like something strange is going on with our climate for some reason.
Yes, but a new study suggests that the increase in extreme temperatures probably won't be a spur to people demanding action on climate change because they're adjusting to it. In a survey of social media published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, researchers found that people learn to accept extreme weather as normal within as little as 2 years. It's known as shifting baselines syndrome. Future generations, therefore, won't feel their climate is unusual, and that could lead people to underestimate the extent of global warming.
Well, it's nice to go out and play golf in February, after all.
Meanwhile, in U.S. politics, majority House Democrats are making up for lost time after years of Republican rule. They're holding several hearings this week focusing on the environment, like grilling the Trump EPA's top enforcement official over the significant decline in inspections and fines of polluters. An analysis of EPA's own data shows that inspections of industrial facilities and fines for violators are at a 10-year low.
In the most unsurprising news of the day.
And the House Transportation Committee examined how upgrading the nation's infrastructure can help communities mitigate and adapt to climate change impacts. However, Republicans in the House Natural Resources Committee walked out of a hearing on climate change denial that focused on the millions of dollars in funding that the climate change denial industry and certain politicians have received from the fossil fuel industry to cast doubt on climate science for decades.
Why did they walk out?
They claimed that it was outside of the committee's purview.
To talk about climate change.
They talk about climate change denial.
In what committee?
House Natural Resources.
Huh.
The House Democrats continued the hearing anyway as a forum. But some Republican politicians are shifting away from outright denial in the wake of public polling showing more Americans than ever are concerned about man-made climate change and other polls showing overwhelming support for the elements of a Green New Deal to create millions of jobs by addressing and preparing for climate change impact.
By the way, support for the Green New Deal is more than 80% of Americans cross all party lines.
And that was not lost on former Ohio Governor John Kasich, who told Axios.com, quote, "Let's have conservatives have a discussion instead of being in denial that this is a problem. You can't just be a climate science denier." And Politico reporter Jake Sherman on MSNBC also noted the shift among Republicans.
More and more Republicans believe that their position is untenable when it comes to climate change. And I don't mean that they're suddenly having a come to Jesus moment about climate science and about changing their views on climate science. But I think a lot of Republicans that I've spoken to say they need to have some sort of answer about the massive changes that we all see in the environment besides saying, no, they're not happening.
Right. Americans are tired of their old BS, so the Republicans need to come up with some all new BS.
Finally, some very big news, a historic shift in Arizona. After years of fighting the spread of solar energy in Arizona, the state's monopoly electric utility, Arizona Public Service, says it will now spend hundreds of millions of dollars to build utility-scale battery farms and solar farms to add to its electric grid because batteries are rapidly becoming the cheapest energy option. They'll replace traditional power plants, including natural gas-fired generation.
Well, take your time moving to solar in Arizona. For much more on all of these reports and the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Better pot that down before it screws up the podcast. yeah, let's stay with the theme just for a moment because, well, stupid is as stupid does. You heard Snot Walker there talking to him at CPAC about the women who give birth to their babies and then take their babies home and fricassee them or what the fuck ever. It, total sick, twisted reproduction the fetish fantasy from the weirdos of the right. But as is usually the case, Scott Walker, well, he tries, but he can't touch. And by the way, Joe Rogan, huge following. Do you just invite Alex Jones on because you know he's going to say nutty things? I don't know. Oh, by the way, note coming in from Ron in the far frozen north. Good evening, sir. 37 inches of snowpack in my backyard, 4 to 6 inches of solid ice on my street, 6 foot snowbanks along the roads, and you can't tell if people are home until you get right to the end of their driveway. That must mean that spring isn't that far away, right? Right, 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 right. Absolutely. No doubt about it. There'll be bluebirds any day now, Ron. Keep the faith, my friend. Keep the faith. I mean, what do you tell you? And that was weird. After the storm last, that was amazing. 30-foot walls of snow along Lake Erie in some places, where the wind blew huge blocks of ice up onto the shore. Oof. Oof. Go away, February. Go away. Vernal equinox. Vernal equinox. I know. Shut up, Bob. Yeah, but, Alex Jones.
Law, you heard.
Now, Joe Rogan posted this clip. And he's given the F word a bigger workout than I ever do on this program. And of course, he's having his shit hemorrhage about abortions, and of course, because he's always got to have an angle like this, organ harvesting. Sure. At least he left the jellyfish monkey hybrid island of Dr. Moreau creatures alone for a little while.
Law, you heard that piece of shit fucking KKK guy, fucking governor, say we're going to keep them alive after they're fucking born because they want to fucking take their organs.
It's incredible.
He's Sorry. A KKK guy?
It's incredible.
Of course, fuck.
It's so incredible that
he's in a picture with a guy in a KKK outfit in blackface. They elected him because he's blackmailed. They had that shit. And when he messed up and said we keep him alive to get their fucking organs, they used that to deactivate him.
Jeez.
Why do you think fraternities have you screw sheep and all this and, you know, give guys blowjobs? That's
I'm going to see if maybe Agnes can find me a bottle of vanilla extract or something. There's got to be something with some alcohol in it around here. There's got to be something that'll take some of the crazy out of it. Oh, my Jesus. He's talking about Ralph Northam in Virginia. And he claims that Ralph Northam says that babies that are born up, oh, God, will be saved for organ harvest. That fucker's a millionaire. And for the life of me, I mean, is there anybody out there that pays attention to it? I remember Joe Rogan from news radio. I played the clip the other night with Flavio. Jimmy James, macho donkey wrestler. Can I get a little help here? Anybody? I mean, is Joe Rogan some sort of weird-ass right-winger that believes in a bunch of bizarre conspiracy theories and shit, too? I honest to God, don't know. But I'm trying to figure out how it is you this turns into... Because, see, this isn't Phil Hendry. You know, he's a past master of the art of creating these characters and coming off... completely sincere with them to the point that you're convinced that they're real. This is not that.
It's so incredible that
he's in a picture with a guy in a KKK outfit in blackface. They elected him because he's blackmailed.
Now, see, we got to go back to this story now because we don't know which person is Ralph Northam. And then we find out that Ralph Northam says it wasn't either one of him. But Alex Jones apparently got a secret message from a jellyfish monkey hybrid who tells him that Northam's the guy in the blackface and he's standing next to a guy in Klan robes. Andy, they're crazy.
They had that shit. And when he messed up and said we keep them alive to get their fucking organs, they used that to deactivate him.
Jeez.
Why do you think fraternities have you screw sheep and all this and, you know, give guys blowjobs? That's why I never joined them.
That's no fraternity I joined. Maybe Alex is upset because he didn't get a bid from the fraternity that did that? Yeah, I don't know.
Because they want to compromise.
Wait, go back. Go back what? Say that again. Fraternities. Okay.
I'm so happy we decided to do this podcast. I'm so happy.
See how it turned out?
So is that what it, so you just put outrageous people on to say outrageous things? Courtesy of Matt in San Francisco. What the fuck, Bob? My tender fucking ears can't take so many fuck words in one fucking sentence. What the fuck? Slow the fuck down with the fuck words, will ya? I'll try to fucking slow the fuck down, okay? Okay, a little explanation coming from Brother Deacon Asa, who knows about these things. Joe Rogan is a professional fucking troll. Is he a right-winger? I think all MMA fanatics are. It's that toxic alpha male syndrome that drives them for the most part. You'll get hate mail for reading this out. See what I did there? Hate mail, M-A-L-E. There was a bar over in Beckley that was run by some wrestling, WWE, MMA fan types, and he seemed to be on the screen a lot of the time when I walked in there. Now I understand maybe a little better. Jack in Shreveport says, I've seen a little bit of his show on YouTube. He had an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Rogan seemed truly curious and would listen to explanations. However, a lot of other YouTube links with right-wingers on his show pop up. I haven't watched any, so I don't know how receptive he is to their crap. And again, along the lines of Monique saying, when do we start blaming the voters? I'll remind myself and us as well that there's a market for that shit. The only reason Alex Jones was there shrieking that insane bullshit is because there is a market for it. In other words, it's good for business because capitalism. Monique says, this is white privilege. Why are white people still angry? They have Trump. Sigh. Nothing will ever make you people happy, huh? You people. I love a good you people. Mm. Oh, by the way, the woman who was a stage prop for Uncle Mark Meadows, Lynn Patton, yesterday, apparently she might be in some shit now. Because she bailed out on a conference. The Julius Geezer sent her to work over with, what's his name? The guy with the grain silos. Temples were grain Joseph's grain silos. Ben Carson. Sent him over to work for Ben Carson at HUD, Lynn Patton. And you'll remember yesterday she showed up at the Cohen hearings and was not allowed to speak with her own mouth, but instead needed Uncle Mark Meadows to speak for her. She was, of course, not sworn, and being as how she was not allowed to make any noises with her own mouth either, she didn't have to worry about any perjury charges or anything. But it turns out she was actually supposed to be at a conference for administrators of the housing agency HUD. But she blew it off to go and stand behind Uncle Mark Meadows. And the Inspector General of HUD is ascertaining all of the related facts and has taken the additional step to refer this matter to the Office of Special Counsel for their review. And the way she got in with the Trump bunch is that she was described as a longtime Trump family event planner, one of a small number of Trump appointees who is African-American, appointed regional administrator of the New York, New Jersey office of HUD, which oversees the New York City Housing Authority and other area public housing agencies. Oh, good for her. Darlene in Connecticut says, thank God my university didn't allow fraternities and sororities. Phew. Although the rugby team was said to be a de facto fraternity, I guess they were the ones screwing the sheep. Hey, easy on the rugby team. Probably had some, like, illicit Sigma Chi's or something there. I mean, we even had a song we sang a million years ago. And the first verse was, there are some Chi Omegas at Purdue. Chi Omega being a sorority. And the final line saying, there are some Chi Omegas, but the Beta Theta Pi's still sleep with Sigma Chi's, oh, there are some Chi Omegas at Purdue. Something like that. Lucrative sales route, says David in South Carolina, Stan. I remember growing up listening to tales of door-to-door vanilla extract salesmen who made a good living servicing dry counties in rural North Carolina. It would not surprise me in the least. You know, about a quart jar, 4/5 of a quart of vanilla extract. Make a lot of cakes, do you, ma'am? Oh, yes, yes, we do. Lee tells me to save the vanilla extract for French toast and chocolate chip cookies. Well, much more of the organ harvesting. Jesus. I don't know. Tis a challenge, I tell you, a challenge. Let's run over and see what's going on with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Going
good, you, man?
Oh, great. I mean, I heard most of your filibuster, but I'm not saying it because I didn't hear it, but I'm just like, man, I don't know. It didn't seem like it had a theme except for the vax. I don't know.
Oh, there's a theme there. Sometimes it has to sort itself out. It's thorn in the side Thursday.
I'm not being funny, and I'm not being, you know.
No. It's thorn in the side Thursday is for any over the top Republican stupidity.
Oh well, that's everywhere. Okay. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. It was just a couple of things that I was thinking about, and it's so good that you had Alex Jones prominent, you know, in your verbiage here, because it's disturbing. Like I used to listen to Alex Jones way back, you know, for fun. Like, I don't know, when he first got big in the mid to late 90s, maybe. You know, because he broke through and did the Bohemian Grove thing. And, you know, when David Gergen got in his face, that shit was crazy. That was funny. But the point of that matter is the president follows him like he follows Sean. Let me tell you something. I've been listening to Sean Hannity and Fat Boy for, you know, not disparaging obese folk, but he's just a nasty motherfucker. You know what I'm talking about. So these
with half my
insane.
Brain tied behind my back.
Oh, my. They just lie. I mean, you know, but Sean Hannity, he is dangerous, and he's always talking about firearms. And he pulled a gun on Juan Williams at work. At work.
Mm-hmm.
May I repeat that? May I repeat that?
Do please.
Sean Hannity pulled a gun on Ron Williams at Fox News at work. He said he was joking. Now, what if somebody who didn't look like him pulled a gun on a coworker and said, oh, I'm just joking?
Sure. Because that's a... that's an affirmative defense in any state for brandishing a weapon. Yeah. No.
You know, and this was like after they had, you know, obviously a discussion, an argument, which I could see. You know, he's just a smug piece of shit. I just don't. But we have to recognize a lot of people follow every word he says. A lot of people follow every word that that fat boy says, and you know, a lot of people follow these other folks, and so that's what we're dealing with. And I'm gonna tell you something. Something we talked about a long time ago. I was listening to I don't know, something on MSNBC. Might have been Ari Melber. But these folks are actually saying, you know, now that, hold on, I have to open this door.
Happens.
All right. So, something we were afraid of with this national emergency. You see, this motherfucker, 45, we can't even hold him accountable because he's, you know, he's certifiable now. So it's the Congress's fault at this point. He has to be reined in. Now, you know, you've got Dr. Lee and her cadre of folks, and there's other people because, you know, it's a big community. The mental health community is a diaspora. And, you know, you got the behaviorists, you got the clinical psychologists, you got these folk, that folk, and, you know, and they fight a lot. You know, they don't want to tell you that, but there's a lot of infighting. You know, because some of it is science and some of it isn't, and that's why people fight. And that's why I always talk about neuroscience versus other stuff. Because, you know, when you can see things that happen in real time in a brain, you know, that's different than just putting a label on someone's behavior, which, you know, we've come to accept that because that's the best we can do now in some respect. But I'm not going to go off on too much of a tangent.
Go wherever the spirit leads you.
I'm just saying, that's the difference between neuroscience and, you know, when I was in school, it was called biopsychology. And we work in a lab, and you have to stay current or, you know, you don't get rehired. So there's a difference. It's like, okay, so you say someone is a sociopath and they have no empathy. And it's like, okay, what does that mean? Well, that means that we all know what that means. I'm not going to go into that. But what it means now is that you can present a subject with a paragraph of, you know, any sort of problem they have to read, and you can see what happens in their mind while they're reading it or doing a problem. And then you can see the areas of their brain that maybe have necrosis or the neural pathways don't look fully developed. You know, and that's science. You see, that's science.
Yeah.
Now, to put a label on it is one thing. Like, we can see there's something wrong with someone. But then when you can get them in live time, you see, and see what's going on, you might see all these black. Like, I believe there's so many blackened areas in this guy's brain. It is not even funny. It's
dead spots.
Dead spot, bad. Oh my God! Come on. So this is what I'm saying. Like if we were worried about empathy, so I would put him on a powerful reinforcement schedule, right? I would try to shape up his behavior, like maybe with verbal praise, paired with, let's say, Big Macs. Chopped up into tiny pieces with toothpicks, you know, like an hors d'oeuvre, a Big Mac hors d'oeuvre. Very good, Donald. You were nice to that woman. very good. Here's a piece of Big Mac on a toothpick. Oh, thank you. You know, and he'd say, oh, thank you, because he's a greedy motherfucker. You know, he'd eat it. So,
who's a big boy who goes to the potty by himself?
Right. That's what we're dealing with. That is, because there's so much wrong with him. And if you look at his history, if they put him in that disgusting school on Cornwall and Hudson at a young age, you know, on top of his history, because we know he has his folks have a history of dementia and Alzheimer's, which with his risk factor, you know, is greatly increased, you know. And that's showing, it's just too much. It's too much. So let's take that into account. But this is something else I was thinking about. Is he still using the unsecured cell phone?
I presume that he is.
Oh, shit.
I mean, look at, did you see that video out of Hanoi yesterday where one minute it was, oh, we're the best of friends, and the next minute... the North Korean Secret Service is running alongside cars, diving through windows to get the fuck out of town.
Isn't that some shit?
Haven't seen that before.
Something's going on.
Because among other things, the North Koreans, and see, I'm so old, I can remember a time when you didn't believe anything the North Koreans said because, well, they were fantasists. You know, when dear leader would score 152 points in a professional basketball game, that kind of thing, or wore size 17 shoes because his feet were so big, right?
Right, right.
And he was so tall. According to the Associated Press, in open dispute, the U.S. and North Korea offered contradictory accounts Thursday of why the summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un broke down, though both pointed to punishing American sanctions as a sticking point in the high-stakes nuclear negotiation. Trump said that Kim wanted all the sanctions the U.S. had imposed lifted without them having to commit to eliminate the nuclear arsenal. North Korea, on the other hand, said, no, we just wanted some sanctions relief in exchange for us shutting down our main nuclear complex. Here's the thing, though. The timing is just a little too goddamn weird, Todd. Because it's only after everything goes to shit with the Cohen hearing that all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I hear my mother calling. She's dead, but I still hear her. I've got to get back on, definitely got to get on the plane, definitely got to go to Washington, definitely. And then gone. I mean, to me, it has all it has all the earmarks of a Trumper tantrum.
Well, it is. It's a very subdued Trumper tantrum, but it's not that subdued. And it should. You know what? He's turned the whole country into a mental patient in crisis, like he is.
But as Tracy pointed out to me last night, the real creepy thing out of it. And I didn't make a big deal out of it yesterday because it's speculative in nature. But this statement that Cohen made that he does not expect that in the event of him being defeated in 2020, he will peacefully transfer power.
Thank you. You brought me back because I got off on the tangent. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Bob. You're so good at that. Thank you. Thank you. Right. National emergency. Okay. Right. This guy, I'm telling you.
And if his stupid fucking national emergency is still in effect, turn off the internet, impose martial law, do whatever he wants to.
Do we understand? He can say, well, this election, we have to investigate. This election was not, no, it was fraudulent. No, it was not legitimate. No, it wasn't. And that's it. But we're already in a crisis, maybe.
I'd like to add something into this discussion. Just because of the proximity to the topic. Mm-hmm. So, who are his foot soldiers right now?
Physical, political.
Well, his base, and it's the evangelical Christians.
Well, sure, right. Okay.
Well, again,
yeah, foot soldiers, right. They're the folks on the ground, right.
CPAC okay. opened today.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's hard to find talent for it, they invited Mike Lindell to speak to CPAC. Now, his name might not immediately go ding, but that's the MyPillow guy.
No shit. I'm not surprised at all. He wears that cross around his neck. I'm not surprised.
Oh, he's a big he's a big old evangelical. And
yep.
He is a big old maggot.
And he goes to Chick-fil-A every time he gets.
So if we're thinking about what Cohen said about Trump being unwilling to peacefully hand over the reins of power, then what Mike Lindell said today at CPAC makes a little bit of a difference. Listen.
Now we're going back in time to 2016. And I see myself in divine appointments, and one was especially important. Donald Trump invited me to meet him at Trump Tower in New York City. I walked into his office with high hopes on August 15, 2016. I walked out of that office after meeting with him, and I knew God had chosen him for such a time as this.
Mm. Oh, listen to the maggots clap.
God answered our prayers, our millions of prayers, and gave us grace. And a miracle happened on November 8, 2016. We were given a second chance and time granted to get our country back on track with our conservative values and getting people saved in Jesus' name. As I stand before you today, I see the greatest president in history. Of course he is. He was chosen by God.
Got that?
Yeah, I hate that. I mean,
well, I hate it, but if these are the people, I mean, if he's chosen by God, then God wouldn't let him be beaten in an election. If he's beaten in an election in 2020, well, the devil will have to have a hand in that. So the Christian soldiers will have to get their guns out and go out and march in the goddamn streets to make sure that their man stays in the White House, because that peaceful transfer of power is for the birds.
Well, you can ask Steve, because I know I believe that he might know. Believe our Washington Journal crowd. God put Donald Trump in there, and that's my president. God bless Donald Trump.
And so, I don't know about you, but that creeps me the fuck right out.
I don't even know. What is a Christian? If that's the case, then what the hell is a Christian?
Christians are whatever those people aren't. I mean, these are idolaters. These are worshipers of various, as the book says, false gods. As far as I can tell.
Jesus. Yep, Christ. Chris, yep, you said that earlier. Oh, my God. Somebody's middle name is Christ. Look, we're in trouble, man. We're in big trouble. And this is what the people were like, I don't know. We hope it turns out okay, because hopefully he won't figure out, or he won't have the folks that will tell him what he can actually do. But that's where we are now. Because he's like, oh, I can do this. Because remember, we have to look back. Let's look back. Now that we know all we know. And that testimony. What I could watch of it, man. May I say a couple of things about?
Say anything you want. It's a regular joint.
Okay. Well, hopefully you won't spoon. All right. So, I noticed that Michael Cohen's affect was absolutely totally different. he looks like a different person. Yeah. I mean, just everything I've seen from him walking, I mean, everything that I could see, it's pretty, his testimony to me was pretty credible. I'm not saying I believe everything he said. But the key is that he was under oath again. He's already going to prison, not jail, prison. Jail's where you go for 90 days. Prison is federal prison where you have to do 80% of your time. Now, knowing that, and he's under oath again, and the name, he mentioned and implicated so many people.
Including, as Darlene points out, he implicated Trump's personal attorneys in his perjury to Congress. Darlene says, I thought he said they looked over and tweaked his statement to Congress regarding the Moscow Tower project. And that is what he said. So good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, J-seculo. Might be an indictment coming. And you know, Maddie Eight Legs, of course, he's not a lawyer, but Maddie Calamari, Maddie Eight Legs, I just love that. I'm going to give a second cowbell of the night.
You got to do that, because that makes all the sense in the world. He, you know, he's probably not as intelligent, you know, as a cephalopod. But
well, that's true. But
I mean,
James really hit it out of the park with Maddie Eight Legs.
Calamari's a crab, so. Yeah, that was good.
Calamari's a squid.
Oh, well, it's a cephalopod then. Okay, yeah. They're as the Bostonians say, he's wicked smart.
Wicked smart, yes.
If you ever know anybody from that area, you know that's everything's wicked.
Oh, I know. I love it. I love it. I love that dialect up there.
I'm sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, it's just everybody, the whole goddamn thing is a criminal enterprise. For all I know, the person who comes in and vacuums the carpet in his office is part of the criminal enterprise. I mean, it's a bit much, but everybody in it, you know, the lady, the woman there, what's her name, Mrs. Rez. No, Mrs. Rez there, who said, well, you know, it was a different time. We all, you know, we all said that word back in 1981, 82. It was all over the place.
But you know what? People don't understand. New York is always, I was living in New York in that era. That's when I was living. Well, I was in the suburbs, but I was there for 3 years. And, you know, look, man, that's the way it was. That's, she's telling the truth just because it's
really?
New York.
I mean, it was because, I mean...
You've got the village. The village is where, if you wanted to be liberal, that's where you went. When the kid, that's where you went. East Village. That's because you got to remember, that's where old money is. Those kids didn't want to, you know, you got a certain segment. They don't want to rock the boat. It's New York, but, you know, come on, man. It's America.
Well, I mean, see, you and Monique are kind of at odds now, because Monique says, that ain't how I was raised. That's not the New York I heard.
Well, it's not everyone. Of course not. I have friends that I went to school with, and I've been to their one of their parents' houses in the Upper West Side, you know, 66th Street, West 56th Street, you know, very nice. They have houses, you know, maybe down on, you know, different places. But look, come on. I was denied housing in the 80s. You know, the 80s, you know, anyway, people were trying better in the 70s. But, yeah, New York is not as liberal as people think it is. And the Bronx is not what people – the Bronx is huge. Like, the South Bronx, yeah, it's a little rough around the edges. But you get North Bronx, like, going towards Fordham. Oh, my God, it's nice as hell up there. And they don't want to rent to no black folk up there. And remember, when you get – they have rent control. So your apartment is like a house. You know, you pay rent or you lease or whatever, but you hold on to it. And rent control, come on. It stays in the family, so you might be paying $500 for a quarter of a floor of a building, like almost a flat. because it stayed in the family for so long. You know, I mean, it's an apartment, but it's large, especially in the older buildings.
Yeah, nice. Hung Like Jesus says Howard Beach and Bensonhurst.
You know, and hey, can I pull somebody's calling me? It's important. Can I pull somebody in?
Oh, sure. You got Tracy there?
No. Hold on. They're gone.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. Yeah, they're gone. Maybe that was a good decision. I didn't know. I didn't want to hit the wrong button. I'm just so frazzled, man. This is shit. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to speak in the street parlance right now. But this is, and see what you're talking about between the national emergency, the entrenched maggots. I don't know. See, this is a cult. It's a cult. People say it's a cultish thing, but it's a great white hope thing. I think a large part of it. See, that's the thing. He knew what to say to a lot of people. And because you got working class black folk, you know, in certain areas that will vote for him because of what he says, you know, but he's a salesman. It's, you know, talk is cheap. And he's a good speaker. He is a good speaker.
Trump?
But he's a charlatan.
Nah, he's a good rabble rouser. I mean, and again, that's one of the questions I would have liked to have heard asked. You've known this man consistently for 10 years. Is his mental state the same as it was 10 years ago?
They didn't ask that. And I like the other stuff. Like, why are you hanging around this racist dude anyway? Like, why? If he's that racist, why are you wearing? Because that's what I'm saying. That's the element.
All that is, Todd, is the American answer because the check keeps clearing.
Right. It's about money. They're all about money.
I mean, that's like asking a mountaintop removal worker in West Virginia, you know, why do you keep doing that job when you're poisoning all the people who live around your job site? Well, they keep paying me, man. That's right. Capitalism.
See, that's a good segue, because really, it's a wonderful segue, because we are firmly entrenched. It's not just about ethnicity and race in terms of bias now. It's socioeconomic. It always was, but now it's more profound, and it's muddier. And that's what makes it more difficult. And that's why I like, okay, I did like a lot, okay, what you said about Russia exploring the fissures, all right, in our society. And, it, you know, it's, and remember, it's not just here. And
well, it's been, among other things, Todd, that's been identified. Russian bots and trolls pushing anti-vaxxerism
in
the United States.
Some people are just not listening. Some people aren't listening. Please say it again.
No, it's not that they're not listening. There are some people who don't want to know this. There are some people who are heavily invested in some goofy-ass notion that Russia is some sort of benign presence, but they're not. The fucker kills journalists. The fucker kills gay people. Has them beaten within an inch of their lives. But yeah, he's benign. But yeah, it's already been documented that Russian bad actors, trolls, bots, have pushed anti-vax conspiracies in the United States. And because we are an open society, see, that's the thing. Back during the Cold War, it was a lot easier for them to plant moles in the United States than it was for us to plant moles in Russia. Because we have an open society. They did not. And since we have an open society and then, you know, our very commitment to free speech becomes an exploitable factor. I mean, it just is.
Well, right. You know, and this whole debacle has triggered not just me, but other people just to look into history And it's very frightening how it's so apparent what's going on. If you just do a little bit of research, it doesn't even take a whole lot. It doesn't take a whole lot. And, you know, we're dealing with folk, you know, as we hear some of the pundits say, you know, they don't have a lot of, they don't have a lot of resources because they steal most of it. And they're too cheap to spend a lot of it. But now, the electronic age, my God, it's so cheap. It costs nothing. They're getting, they don't, this is their wet dream. This is it. And when you brought up the Vaxxer thing, you know, and it's just wow. Wow. And just think, if they had people on the ground here, all right, okay, so let me bring this back a little bit because I've been thinking about this. Let me bring it back. Okay. Think about the end of Obama's term when he politely asked about, I don't know, 30-some, I don't know your number. I'm thinking 30. Why? I think it's 30. Russian spies. Politely, they had to go. They were near Camp David. They were out there. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So in that same time frame, it was reported that there was a Russian troller right off of the East Coast, like just over international waters, okay? Just far enough where they could probably get intercepts and signals from folk maybe in Trump Tower or cell phone. Remember, and right, okay, so this is the other component. This is the same time it was reported that there were stingrays deployed all over the D.C. area, and the stingray is a fake cell tower.
So yeah, for capture purposes, yeah.
Correct. Right. So if you got someone's cell phone number, now all the transmits will go through that. It'll go where the signal will go where it has to go, but in between, it'll be a data dump into that fake cell tower. So let's say you have Donald Trump's number on the cell phone that he likes to use that's unsecured, okay, or a congressperson, right? So they're collecting all this compromise on Congress people in addition to paying them. See, they work it. They can work it both ways. You know, $10,000 isn't that much, but it might be a lot to a congressperson who's greedy. Or, you know, $10,000 quarterly. You know, who knows? Everybody has a price. Because now we have to look at, and we talked about this, I hate to say how long ago because it makes me feel bad, but you know, how many people in the Electoral College have been compromised? They had to know that this individual was compromised or at least mentally deficient.
To answer that question, you have to talk about what is the Electoral College. The Electoral College is the number is the same as the number of senators and members of the House that any given state has. So you have to ask, you know, say Senator McConnell compromised? I think the answer is obviously yes.
It appears that way. Now we have the clear evidence would be, without even digging, would be the fact, undisputed fact that the previous president went to him and said, we have to go forward collectively with this information. I just kicked out all these Russian agents. We have a problem here with our elections. They have infiltrated, and we need to come forward with this together. Otherwise, it will look like, you know, one side is being partisan. And Mitch McConnell said no. He said no. Now, the media are, you know, they're culpable at some point with this. They knew that. They had to know that.
Sure. How would they not?
How would they not? Okay, and here's another layer on this. I don't hear anyone making the connection between what we're dealing with now and that disgusting decision of Citizens United.
Well, why don't you do that?
Well, that decision made it where any kind of dark money could come in, I mean, very simply, even through a half-assed right.
Which is why I asked you to elucidate, because when Barack Obama excoriated the Citizens United decision, he said specifically in his State of the Union address, you may remember this, that the Supreme Court's horrible Citizens United decision now allows foreign money to sneak into our political campaign process. And you might remember that Sammy Bad Breath sat there and shook his head, no, no, only it turns out to be yes, yes, because that is exactly what happened in 2016. Isn't it?
It's absolute. I'm wondering how come no one's talking about this shit. Because it pissed me off. I remember we talked about this a year. I was like, oh, the three worst things that have ever happened in the past, I don't know, 20 years, Citizens United, George Bush Jr., and that war that we're still fucking fighting for no reason. And that asshole Federalist judge, the midget. I don't even want to... I'm flustered. No,
I'm talking
about Scalia.
Yeah.
See, that was Scalia. That was Scalia. That was his doing. So, am I being
Wait. No. Citizens United was the Kennedy kid.
Oh my God.
Because he's the one who gave us the quote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he gave us a quote, something like, just because an entity gives money to a politician does not give rise to a presumption of a quid pro quo arrangement. So in Supreme Court speak, that's saying, give them all the money you want, fellas. We're never going to say it's bribery.
See... But on the face of it, what he said is true, but it's not functionable. It's not workable in the real world. You see?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that this is why you cannot have certain people as judges. Now, like Kavanaugh, he should be disqualified not because of things we can't prove, but only because of his display and his financial dealings. How the hell did he have all those debts disappear? And you have a ranked congressman, mad as an old man, ready to kill his ass in front of everybody. In front of every Patrick Leahy, he was about to strangle that motherfucker.
Yeah.
All right. So why no discussion of citizens? Well, I guess because it doesn't matter. I guess because it doesn't.
Well, what's to discuss until we get a Congress that can either pass a constitutional amendment or a president who's in there long enough to replace enough people to so that you've got a majority that can fucking overturn it as soon as a case becomes sufficiently ripe and justiciable to get it in front of the Supremes.
Man, I'm not having a good feeling here at all because I feel like these people are entrenched. This is the worst case scenario. We have too many people in the wrong positions, wrong for our end and right for their end. You see, this is a coup. We're experiencing this is a slow moving coup. And
I don't think it's slow moving anymore. I think it's been accomplished.
Well, that's fucked up.
And if you operate from the presumption that the Republicans, anytime you hear a Republican complaining about something, they're doing the very thing they're complaining about.
Oh,
you've talked about that in the past.
The projection is from the top to the bottom. It is just
well, let me offer as exhibit one Mark Levin, the man with a voice made for print, okay?
What is it? It's a voice. Where's the cowbell on that?
So, oh, okay, yeah. There's a cowbell. Levin had a hissy over an exchange between Joe and Mika and Andrew McCabe. You said the magic word a minute ago. See if you can hear Mark Levin use it, too.
You went and talked to the Gang of Eight. When you talked to Mitch McConnell, when you talked to Devin Nunes, any concerns from Nunes, Burr, Ryan, or McConnell?
Now, keep something in mind here. This guy McCabe, who the schmo was talking to, was leading a coup against the President of the United States. He was
Got it?
Trying to overthrow the government of the United States. He was trying to undo a duly elected president and a presidential campaign.
See, the problem is there's not a shred of evidence to suggest that anything that Mark Levin says is true. But they'll just say it anyway to cover for the fact that they're already engaged in one themselves that is subject to proof by hard fucking data.
But they don't like empiricism. They don't like data. They don't like science. They don't believe in it.
I mean, what do you call it when you conspire with a hostile foreign power to alter the outcome of an election? That's a coup. I mean, we're doing the same thing in Venezuela right now.
Yes.
It's like it's like Bill Hicks once said in Dallas in 1963. Groups of anti-Castro pigeons were heard drinking in bars, yelling, coup, coup. Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
But projection is what they do. If they say that Democrats are taking babies home and barbecuing them, it only means that they'd like to eat barbecued baby, because that's what Republicans are. If they say that babies are being left to die after they're born, it's only because Republicans want a world in which babies are left to die after they've been born, because we've gotten rid of things like Medicaid and WIC, which is one of their wettest wet dreams. Dig?
I dig. Okay. Exhibit two.
He was trying to disenfranchise 63 million people who voted for Donald Trump.
Which, curiously enough, 63 million people who voted for Donald Trump is less than 66 million who voted for Hillary Clinton. So if anybody got a fucking coup run on them, it was Hillary Clinton. And I don't want to hear about the goddamned Electoral College. No. Even though former Maine governor, LePage?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that person.
That crazy little bastard declared that we've got to keep the Electoral College. Let me get the quote here. Talking about any move to change the nature of the Electoral College, and in particular these compacts that would say our Electoral College votes will go to the popular vote winner, that's a thing. LePage said on a radio station interview with WVOM, what would happen if they do what they say they're going to do? White people will not have anything to say. It's only going to be the minorities who would elect. It would be California, Texas, Florida.
Hmm. Well, he let the cat out of the bag. That's exactly what they're scared about.
And he went on to say that letting the winner of the popular vote become president would be a dictatorship similar to, quote, the Constitution of Venezuela.
Okay, so that's the microcosm of that is what's going on in the night, okay, in North Carolina. I remember we talked about that, and I was looking at the map as we talked about it, and I was like, oh, shit, that looks like a normal distribution. Just on the face of it, you know, you have, you know, outside of Charlotte, and you go down across. Anyway, so that, but that's what they did not want. And that, you know, that would be a fair election, maybe, because everyone doesn't vote. Let's not forget that.
Well, and just to add a soupçon of flavor to all of this madness, that WVOM that LePage gave the interview to,
yeah.
If you go to their website, you know how it is with radio stations. They'll have their lineup, their pictures of their talkers at the top of the page. Well, if you go to WVOM's page, there's a picture of Rush Limbaugh, Sean, life support system for a haircut, Hannity job, the Beckerhead, Howie Carr, Rick Tyler, and some old coot named George Hale. Let's check in with the audio just for a second for the fun of it.
Texas and California and Illinois, those five states will elect the president of the United States, and we will never see another president or another candidate to Maine. This is so insane. Why don't you just forget about it? Why don't we just adopt the Constitution of Venezuela and be done with it? Let's have a dictator, because that's really what you're going to boil down to. You're going to have five or six states that are going to control everything in Washington. If you really think about what's happened, Susan Collins has been a very powerful senator for Maine, from a very sparsely populated state, but she has been a national figure. Olympia Snow, the same thing. And what they're trying to do now is saying, well, you know, the president, we're just going to forget about. Minorities are going to, well, actually, what would happen if they do what they say they're going to do, white people will not have anything to say. It's only going to be the minorities that would elect. It would be California, Texas, Florida.
That was one of the points that came up in our discussion this morning, that minorities felt that they are not getting heard, but this would give them a majority of the voice. We'll see what happens in our state. Governor George...
I find that very sad. It saddens me that we're willing to just take everything we stand for and just throw it away.
When you were...
Ain't that some shit?
Yeah, ain't that some shit?
Because there aren't any... Because, see... there aren't any white people in California, Texas, or Florida, or Illinois.
You couldn't wait to play that. That shit, Bob. You need to play that like all the time now. Like for the next, I don't know.
They're trying to get rid of all of us Maine white people.
But wait a minute, Mark Meadows. He might lose his nieces and nephews.
Well, you're kind of assuming that they're black.
They're minorities. They're people of color. If you're of color, you're a minority. They're probably Asian, though. They, looking at him, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, it might be Asian. Who knows? It doesn't matter.
And by the way, you missed the reference. Anytime we refer to him now, that's Uncle Mark Meadows. Because he's got so many nieces and nephews. Oh, and by the way, Mark Meadows is only in office based upon a ruling of a court and an admission by the government of the Republican government of the state of North Carolina. He's only in office because his district, according to the ruling, was gerrymandered specifically to diminish and render utterly meaningless the votes of people of color in North Carolina.
Was he part of that surgically selected few?
Yes. That case.
That was paraphrasing, but that's what that North Carolina Supreme Court said. It was like surgically.
Well, because the Republicans admitted, wait, the only reason we did it this way is we don't want black people to have a meaningful vote. Wrong accent, but
okay. So we have Congress, we have politicos on the tape from you know, mid level up, who knows how deep. We know it's up high. Then they're in charge of doing these redistricting maps and having the demographics and polling data
which they in turn forward to a foreign entity so that they can in turn target, advertise through Facebook and other means American folks who are dumb as shit. They don't fucking read, and they get the news off of Facebook, and somebody sent me a post, and but it says CZ at the end of the URL, but I don't care. I believe it. You know, is that what we're dealing with here?
We're dealing with a great deal of white. Well, in the sense, you know, Emery and Marvelline, you know, they're scared to death. And you've got a political class out there of Republicans whose only purpose in life is to stoke Emery and Marvelline's, you know, the tens of millions of Emery's and Marvelline's fears. That's all. I mean, you got any data otherwise?
No, and it's all a distraction. And if people read a little bit of history, this is what killed Malcolm X, is what killed Martin Luther King, is that at near the end of their life, it was like, you know what? It's about the power elite against the working folk. Because we look around now, look how depressed wages are. And I think I heard a piece on your program last night where someone contributed a wonderful statistic that they had broken it down in terms of, and that's been a craw in my, it's been hurting me for a while, intellectually, is that, you know, since I'll never forget it. And when Reagan came in, he was like, well, you know, unions, you just have to give a little and you'll get it back, you know, because we have to compete against China and, well, it wasn't China, you know, other foreign countries, you know, with our manufacturing, and you're just asking too much. So back then, you could make a minimum wage, you know, and maybe live. But if you go across the country now, look out, we're at the $8 to $10 economy now. And it's not just here. You see, the globalists, see, this is more projection.
Well, no, this is what so-called free trade without appropriate safeguards in it gets you. Free trade, unless it contains strong language that says that we're going to raise everybody else's wages up as opposed to pushing higher wages down, you wind up with, see, jobs fled America back when people were making decent money. Now jobs are coming back to America when there's a new generation that doesn't know what it means to make decent money.
And it was
visible and predictable all along. It wasn't hard to see that, because, you know, this is the kind of crap that is chapter and verse from people like Milton Friedman and the University of Chicago School of Economics. Mm-hmm. You've always got to keep the working class scared to fucking death, because a scared working class is a controllable working class.
That's right. You don't want to lose your job, do you? You don't want to lose your job.
You're one payday away from destruction, so you're going to keep your mouth shut and your head down.
Now look how hoodwinked our populace is. They know, if they're paying attention, they know damn well for the past, I'd say, all the research indicates that for the past probably 10 years, most folk are two paychecks away from being on the street, like missing rent, missing a mortgage, missing a car payment. Well, the car payment is a whole other issue that just came out.
Right, and look what the tax giveaway did. It destroyed people's ability to write off the entirety of their property taxes. Now, in a state like this, where property taxes aren't much of a big deal because we're dead ass broke.
New Jersey? Have you ever
but
seen,
Jersey, man? PA, California.
And I'm telling you right now, there's people who live in Bucks County, PA, because like if you have a good job in New York City, That is the best place to live. You will get a nice
God damn hell, if you got a good job in New York City and you live in Bucks County, PA, how long does it take to commute?
Not long at all. You're not long. That's what I'm saying. It's not long at all. It's the best kept secret. Oh my God, it's not long at all. Because no, it's not long. Because what you like, if you wanted to live in Greenwich, look, Montclair. I mean, you come out of the tunnel, you get hit Montclair. You know, you can't even fucking look at a house. Period. You're not even going to do it.
You know, it was about a year ago we had our little trip up to New York and had our little mini horn in and stuff. And just because I'm a history geek, on Sunday, Tara took Chris and Ferg and me across into New Jersey because I wanted to see Weehawken, where the Burr Hamilton duel took place.
That's where ShopRite is based. I love ShopRite. Look, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And you know, it was just pretty neighborhood homes sitting there on the palisades over the Hudson River. And you know, I have no knowledge of what home values are. I'm like George Bush trying to understand a barcode scanner. But you know, these were houses that were 50, 60, 70 years old. Pretty, but you know, just old houses in an old New Jersey community. And right. I'll bet you, and it was a pretty neighborhood. And Ferg was like, "Dad, this is kind of nice here." I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "You couldn't afford to live here, boy."
No.
That house right there, that's $100,000 in West Virginia, is $1 million here.
Easy. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, you can't even live. You can't even smell New York, man. Like Newark used to be the suburb. You can't live in Newark anymore. You got to live down in Irvington, Patterson. People commute from Poughkeepsie. You know, come on. It's worth it. It's worth it. If you're making that, you know, it depends what kind of money you're making. A lot of people take the train. You know, just get up early enough and take people know you're commuting. You know, if you're a higher level position, you know, that's what you do. Because your property, you know, and Long Island, there's only so much of Long Island. Those folks who got in on the bottom end of that Long Island thing, man, they were onto something. Think about that, man. That shit sticks out into the ocean. You can do anything you want out there. Oh.
You know, I had a note from back when Paul LePage was talking about how white people won't mean anything anymore.
What kind of people?
White people.
What about the pinks?
Pink people. They're pretty much white people who get a little further south of Maine. We're very white up here. No sun.
Pepperidge Farm. You sound like the Pepperidge Farm guy.
I'm trying to. But Arthur said, "You can't have five or six states control everything." And Arthur says, "Yeah, Kincaid, you can't have five or six states control everything like California and Washington and New York. You got to have five or six states controlling everything like Kentucky and Idaho and Wyoming and Iowa and Oklahoma." Wait.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Wait, how's California the most populous state, a minority of the country? Oh, wait, minorities. I see.
Wait a minute. So what these folks are saying, because remember, a lot of these people, they don't understand binary things. They don't see any gray areas, so they're pretty much binary anyway. So they're saying, okay, if we're not winning, then fuck the system. But as long as we're winning, it's okay.
Well, let's see. Let's
Even
look at it this way.
Minority.
Puerto Rico does not have any senators at all.
Why the fuck are you going to bring up Puerto Rico?
Work with me here. Puerto Rico does not have any senators at all and has one non-voting member of the House.
What the fuck is that?
Puerto Rico has a higher population. That little bitty island in the Caribbean has a bigger population than West Virginia, Rhode Island, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Kansas, and several other states. But they don't get any senators.
Nope.
And they don't get any senators, just like D.C. doesn't get any senators, because there's not a chance in hell that either one of those, were they allowed to have full access to American governance, would ever send a Republican to Congress.
I mean, little, you know, Puerto Rico just sits down there. It's just kind of this little rectangle, right? It's got a bunch of people on it.
I never thought about that population disparity, though.
They'd probably, Puerto Rico would probably have more members of the House than West Virginia.
Oh, well, you can't have that. I mean, but what, you know, but brown people are mostly, here I go. No, I don't want to say that. People are people. There are going to be.
No. Hold the damn phone. People are not people. At least not according to the Republican Party. There's people, and then there's people.
Oh, you want to be in the horn end? Okay. You want to be horn end talk? Okay.
There's 3.4 million people in Puerto Rico. There's 1.5 million in West Virginia.
Damn.
Let's see here. I just happen to have it handy. 3 million people is the cutoff. You want to hear the states in? You want to hear the U.S. states that have fewer people than Puerto Rico? The states that have two voting members of the Senate and at least one member of the House? Wyoming,
yeah.
Vermont, Alaska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Delaware, Rhode Island, Montana, Maine, New Hampshire, Hawaii, Idaho, West Virginia, Nebraska, New Mexico, Kansas, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Nevada. That states 32 through 50. Have fewer people in the entire state than Puerto Rico does.
Why is Mississippi That's so...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. That is 38 fucking senators to zero.
Ooh, that's a nice number, isn't it?
Wyoming. Two Republican senators. Alaska, two Republican senators. North Dakota, two Republican senators. South Dakota, two Republican senators. Montana, two Republican senators. Idaho, two Republican senators. West Virginia, two Republican senators. Yeah, Manchin, but we're up to 14. Nebraska, two Republican senators. We're up to 16. Kansas, two Republican senators, 18. Mississippi, two Republican senators, 20. Arkansas, two Republican senators, 22. And then after that, it's Utah, Iowa. Utah and Iowa have as many people as Puerto Rico. The District of Columbia has 703,608 people in it. In that tiny little chunk of ground.
That beautiful tiny chunk of ground. God, DC is great.
And no senators. Yeah, I mean, if you, and I only mention that by way of suggesting that if you really want structural reform in this country. If you really want to give Paul LePage a case of the dribbling turtle squirts, then we start talking about equalizing the Senate. Because again, as is the case, Todd, with so many aspects of American constitutional governance, the Senate was set up. Come on, why?
Well, the Senate was set up because I believe they were ones who were supposed to. Let me slow down. Was it the Senate or the House?
The House is apportioned by population. Everybody right. gets two senators.
But I'm going back further than that because at one point only senators voted.
No.
Oh, reps voted. We didn't vote.
No, there was no direct in the original Constitution. There was no direct election of senators. That was changed by amendment.
Okay. Right. Okay. So I'm sorry. I went back that far. Yeah, but we were supposed to get two. Right.
But see, that was to protect the slave states, so that they would have an equal voice with the states whose population grew more rapidly than theirs, because they didn't have a real economy. They were economies built on stolen labor.
Well, see, right.
But then to make sure, so again, racism plays into the Constitution of the into how the Senate is constituted, and then over on the House side, they had to. That's where the 3/5 clause comes in, because you count every slave as 3/5 of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So that the South can then at least have a fighting chance in the population-based House of Representatives. In other words, the entire structure of the Congress
just did is just delineate why race matters still, and doesn't matter if your father had slaves or not. There is still institutional racism because of illegal representation. That's what Bob Kincaid just explained. I'm sorry.
Well, the Constitution has its roots in slavery policy, and since we've moved over,
that's why these originalists want to go back.
Ding! Wait a minute. And there's another thing out there. Every time,
man, wait a minute, Bitcoin. Wait a minute, I got $200,000 on Bitcoin now.
Every time you hear one of these godforsaken Republicans say, well, I don't necessarily support President Trump, but you know what? I am a small government conservative. Small government conservative is also dog whistle code for I am racist as fuck. And there are people who use that phrase who don't know that. And they would be deeply offended if you told them that. Like, oh, I don't know, Meghan McCain.
Bob, take into account what you just said. Now, looking at this new class of folk coming in, you know, to the House and the Senate, but more the House, obviously the House. And someone brought it up on TV, but some of these folks are visibly shaken. They're not used to being around people who don't look like them, like real folk. Like look at McBath, Mrs. McBath, whose son, you know, she's like a gun rights activist, you know, because her son got shot down. Now, the only reason she got into politics is because of an issue that affected her life. A real person, you know, and she had to wherewithal.
Right, because it finally touched her.
It touched her, but these folks are seeing, they're looking around, and they're not used to dealing with folk, you know. This is interesting, but now it's too late. Our shit is fucked up. Our shit is fucked up now. Our shit is so fucked up. If these Republican senators don't fucking act like they have some fucking sense and be real,
well, it will be. It will be acting.
Man, is somebody on the phone? Look, this is crazy. This shit is. I'm just so irritated. And you talked about projection. Do you remember one of the questioners to Cohen was like, You're just a pathological liar. And I was thinking the same thing Cohen was thinking.
Yeah, that was Paul Gosar, whose family won't even speak to him. He's so fucking nuts.
What is going on? This cult shit has got to stop. You know, people, this is not a damn career. You know, if you lose, nobody wants to vote for you. See, this is my thing now. And like I think it was Monique. And you know, a lot of people are thinking this. Well, it's the populist. I mean, you can always, it only takes one asshole, but it's the million people that follow that one asshole.
There we go. You know, he's not former Governor Paul LePage because he seized power in Maine by a coup, Mainers put him in office. Mainers keep sending noted centrist Susan Collins, who ain't, to Washington, D.C. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about individual politicians on this program, Todd, but great God Almighty, the people we maybe ought to be talking about are Emory and Marvelline, who keep sending these fucking Klansmen, white supremacists, white nationalist Republicans, to the Congress.
I want to see a whole team go to Steve King's district and not confront, but compel them to talk, open up. What do you see so redeeming about this person that you're putting in government to speak for you? Does he really speak for you? Don't be ashamed, and don't be mad when someone calls you a racist. Because most white people do not understand that they are racist, even though they're racist. And that's part of the fucking problem.
What they don't understand, because they've never been taught, is what the word means. There's a lot of people in this country think that you have to walk around wearing your bed linens and setting fire to crosses to be a racist. Obviously, that is not the case. Institutional, structural, there's different kinds. And I mean, to be fair, I only know this because I sat down and was willing to be taught about this.
Mm.
Now I got a story, it's not a macro story. It's a micro story.
Mm-hmm.
But just when Ralph Northam thought that shit might be settling down because, polling in Virginia suggested that none of the Democrats really want him to resign. They figure, okay, you know, he did stupid things when he was young, and you just kind of file it under white people. And so, finally, you know, the news cycle is slowing down and everybody's not talking about him. Mrs. Northam decides that maybe it's time for her to weigh in. Now you might remember Mrs. Northam from the press conference when the member of the press asked Ralph if he could still moonwalk. At which point Mrs. Northam chimed in and said, "Only in appropriate circumstances."
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize that Mrs. Northam. Well, I mean, I guess
she's passing for white.
Well, no, Mrs. Northam. She's just typical white lady, string of pearls, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
She went to a school. She didn't go to a school. Some school kids were touring the executive mansion there in Richmond. And that building was constructed with stolen labor in 1813. It is, in point of fact, the oldest governor's mansion in the country.
Damn, that's like the House of Burgess or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, we're way back.
Damn, 1813.
And so, and this is the part where you kind of go, ha. Mrs. Northam, in an effort to have a teachable moment, and look, I'm not one of these people who thinks that we can defeat the effects that slavery had on this country by never talking about it again. I think we need to talk about it more and more honestly, more and more brutally. We need to make abundantly clear how hateful it was.
Wait a minute. You can't.
I mean, it's kind of like when one of the women on our side from the hearing yesterday referred to the patent woman there that Uncle Mark brought in.
Oh, we didn't get to that. Oh, that shit pissed me the fuck off.
And she said, you know, he had her standing there like she was on the auction block.
And she didn't do shit. I was like, why are you there? So they could just see you? She didn't say anything. She just stood there. What the fuck?
And the Republican world was on fire. The white-winged maggot world was on fire this morning. You could almost hear the packets passing in the internet. No, 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 Rashida Tlaib, she's the real racist. She called Donald Trump a motherfucker.
These people have lost their fucking mind. Why did that woman stand up there? They had her stand, and it looked like she was waiting to say something, but Mark Meadows was...
No, Uncle Mark. Uncle Mark wasn't going to let her talk.
Uncle Mark.
Uncle Mark wasn't going to let her talk.
Wait a minute.
She was to be seen and not heard. Was a display. She was a stage prop.
Level. Do you mean to tell me you really believe that he just intended for her to stand the fuck up there? Are you serious?
Yeah, because the only way she could have... Nobody speaks in those hearings except sworn witnesses and members.
Oh, my God. Well,
he brought her in as a fucking mannequin.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, I didn't know the rules like that. Okay, so, well, that means he's more of an asshole than I thought he wouldn't. You know, if that were possible. Oh, my God. He should be censured. And Tlaib, Ms. whatever her name is, she was not wrong.
No, she wasn't wrong.
And I'm sick of people, listen.
And look, I played the clip last night. Uncle Mark Meadows standing... In 2012, we're going to send Barack Obama back to Kenya or wherever it is he's from.
It's incongruent to be a part of that caucus and be normal. That's the first thing. It'd be very difficult. It would be very difficult.
But I'm not a racist because... My son married a girl, an Indian girl, you know, Dot, not Feather. And they got some little half-breed children. Now, that's not me. That's not me saying that. That's me mocking that toxic fuck. But let's get back to the First Lady of Virginia, shall we?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please.
So, some eighth graders were touring the mansion, and they were being taught things like, yes, this mansion was built with stolen labor, and none of the people who built this mansion, and none of the people who are descended from those who built this mansion, have ever been compensated for the labor that was stolen from them. No, they don't say shit like that, but it's fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mrs. Northam, was participating in the eighth graders' tour of the historic governor's residence built from stolen labor. And Mrs. Northam started Mrs. Northam started handing out raw cotton bowls. To
what?
A couple of little African-American kids and said, now, honey, why don't you try to imagine being a slave and having to pick this?
No, that sounds like some made-up shit, man. Come on. Don't be like Breitbart, man.
Dateline, February the 28th. Washington, D.C., published in the Washington Post. Leah Dozier Walker, who oversees the Office of Equity and Community Engagement at the State Education Department, wrote February 25th to lawmakers and the officer of Governor Ralph Northam, the governor and Mrs. Northam have asked the residents of the Commonwealth to forgive them for their racially insensitive past actions. But the actions of Ms. Northam just last week do not lead me to believe that this governor's office has taken seriously the harm and hurt they have caused African Americans in Virginia, or that they are deserving of our forgiveness. Can we unpack this for just a minute, please, Todd?
Man.
You just work with me for a sec.
I don't know what to say, Bob. Yeah, okay.
Virginia became a slave economy because of tobacco. Okay, I mean, I'm just talking about history here. I'm not defending Mrs. Northam or anything. But Virginia was a tobacco state. You got to get a little further south. You got to get into your Georgia, your Alabama, and your Mississippi, and your Louisiana, and your Arkansas, and your Texas, before you get into the chopping the cotton. I mean, maybe some cotton was grown in Virginia, not a lot.
Virginia was tobaccoed and
right, but I guess Mrs. Northam was worried that she might be contributing to the delinquency of a minor if she gave each of those little African-American kids a plug of fucking chewing tobacco. imagine being a slave and having to pick tobacco. Tobacco's bad for you. So she went, okay, so this is going to be a teachable moment, and I'm not going to use tobacco because tobacco kills. I'm going to use cotton instead.
We got the memo from the communications department. They said, well, no, we can't do that because we'll lose money on grants. We can't do that. Sorry.
Oh, and by the way, James just cleared things up for me. Sometimes I have a hard time with things besides ciphering, like familial proximity. And James says, now, Bob, it wasn't his grandchildren. It was his brother's or his wild sister's kids. We tried to talk some sense into her. Wait a minute. That one's for James.
Yep.
But
that's it.
But you just kind of got to take a minute. And wow. Because, again, and help me here. I want little white and little black children and little everybody children to have a realistic understanding of the hateful brutality of chattel slavery. Because we're never going to get over it or get past it in this country until we do have that kind of understanding of just how evil we were. Okay?
I'm on board.
But I don't think singling, I mean, you know, okay, why was it only handed to the little African American kids? You know, it's the old chewing gum rule. Don't bring it to school. Don't you bring cotton bowls to this tour unless you're bringing enough for everybody.
Right.
I guess it would have been confusing if little Timmy and little Cindy, you know, little white kids had come home. Well, what you got there, little Timmy? Well, it's a cotton bowl. The governor's wife asked us to imagine being slaves. Well, the nerve of her. You're white.
Too bad. White people pick cotton, too. But you know, the thing is, just give everybody green beans. You know, something. But see, like you say, what you're intimating is that that's an insight into our mind. You see?
Because she still associates. African-American people with slavery.
And cotton.
And picking cotton.
That's a cotton picking chain.
But I saw that, and it was like, really? Yeah. Ralph must be just downright something next door to apoplectic. Honey, it was beginning to calm down. What in the Sam hell did you think you were doing handing a couple of little African-American kids some goddamn cotton balls?
You know, so he might be the best of the couple. Who knows?
He might be. That's the thing.
Like she said, like she had enough sense to say, this is what we do at home. We don't do this out in public, dear. You know? I mean, you know, it's like my people were telling me, like, this, in other words, mystery never went out of style. It just resurfaced, like, in a more public way. You know, and the fact that people just not understand that the wealth of this country, it's really simple. Ask people a question. How do you think in just a few hundred years this country got so wealthy so fast? So fast.
Yeah.
You know.
And after you took the free labor away, after we took the free labor away from them, why do you reckon the South stayed so poor for so long? That free labor is a real shot in the arm for an economy.
Well, look, I don't know the right answer to that. Because I'm let's say I was a white planter. You know, just a regular old...
It's all capitalism, Todd. It's all capitalism because...
You want to give up your farm equipment and then get nothing in return.
You did not just compare chattel slavery to farm equipment.
Well, it's not, because chattels, they reproduce. That's true. Farm equipment does not reproduce.
It's a larger cycle, though, because when industrialization comes to North America, it comes first to New England and then in the Northeast.
Right.
And you got a lot of water power in New England. So you got a lot of mills and the textile business, and it spreads south, and the so-called rag trade catches on in New York City, and the garment district develops. But look what happens: unionism comes along, and you start getting the struggle for a living wage in those mills in New England. What do? They say fuck this shit, and they pack up. And they move to the South, where they can pay much lower wages. But the South is so beat down and bedraggled that even the crummy wages they're paying there substantially alter the economic landscape so that people start living middle-class lives. And then back in the 90s, along comes NAFTA and the AFL-CIO and every union from home to Rome and Maine to Spain says, you know, NAFTA is going to destroy the textile and garment economy all over this country, and the shoe business and all that. Globalism, it'll be good for the world. And the next thing you know, the people who had nice middle class lives in Alabama and textile mills in Mississippi and whatnot, well, they're out of a fucking job again because the job has gone to Mexico. And guess what that did? And again, that's Bill Clinton hand in glove with Newt fucking Gingrich.
Yep.
And so those jobs are gone to Mexico, and a whole lot of pissed off people, including some African American folks, look up and go, fuck, my life just went to Mexico. My home mortgage just went to Mexico. My car payment just went to Mexico. And then an idiot punk like Donald Trump comes along. Are we going to make America great again? And so they'll cling to any reed that they can stick in their mouth and breathe through.
Because they haven't had the opportunity to be educated.
Because they've been getting fucked from jump. And I'm not talking, and this isn't me making the economic anxiety argument.
No.
This is me pointing out the pernicious evils of fucking capitalism when it runs on an unregulated basis.
You know, one thing that Ed Schultz pointed out that I thought was very poignant before his demise, or whatever happened to him, is that, you know, we
some the people that those the maggots voted for, maggot type folk voted for, they voted to subsidize people for taking up their factory. When I say lock, stock, and barrel, I mean that's a lot of good heavy machinery. You know, you just don't spend $89,000 on a new pressing tool or whatever. It shipped everything overseas, Mexico, China, wherever. Then would train people how to work the machinery. You know, the people that were going to lose their jobs and train people who were going to take the jobs. And then they got, the capitalists, the owners of the factories, they got a tax break for moving. You know, I would love to get a tax break. Hey, I'm going to give you $5,000 for selling your house and moving. I'm like, I'm on. I'm signing up right now. I'm out of the
sure. I mean, that's the argument about putting Amazon in the middle of some of the most expensive real estate on earth. You know, Northern Virginia and New York City.
In Queens? Oh, my God. The traffic? Oh, hell. They would have had, I'm sorry. They need to pay.
Well, I mean, I know my D.C. traffic in Crystal City is going to be no goddamn party. So, yeah. But on the other hand, if you really want to be an economic force, again, put it along the Kentucky-West Virginia line. Lots of open land, a pretty competent workforce. More would have to be brought in, but more would move to it. And it's a hell of a lot cheaper to build housing there than it is in fucking Queens or Crystal City, and you can make a real difference in the middle of America.
What's Uncle Joe Manchin doing?
If it's not covered up in coal dust, Joe ain't interested in it.
What? See, this is once again. I'm back to this Citizen United shit because it's so nefarious. Like they were ready. They were ready. Look, they were at the gate, like a dam, like water at a dam, ready just for you to just open that sluice. Okay, just like the Voting Rights Act, they were ready there. No, just open the sluice so we can just fuck this shit up. That is where we are. This is fucked up. Now, what do we have to do?
You tell me.
I know, that was a terrible question, wasn't it? Well,
but I mean, the one takeaway is that these are not problems without solutions. But they are problems that people have to actually want to solve. And screaming socialism every time somebody suggests that maybe we might want to regulate otherwise unregulated, brutal capitalism, well, that ain't socialism. That's enlightenment.
So. Okay, Bob. Now we have been talking about these infectious diseases, and I see you have to run. But these infectious diseases now, because of people being confused about what vaccines are safe and what are not, and having these vector points everywhere, that is a good case for, once again, universal health care, because you have people who work fast. Everybody likes that cheap burger, those French fries. Those folk who make that food cannot afford to miss a day of work. They're going to work sick. It used to be, because of regulations, there would be a health check, and you couldn't work in a restaurant if you were sick, if you had TB or some type of other infectious disease. You couldn't go to work. But now nobody cares, and we have no universal health care. We never did, but we have less, maybe. So that's something to think about, maybe.
Yeah. And that's what we need to be doing, is thinking about things, thinking about these problems, looking for solutions. And we've got a majority in the Senate that ain't interested and a president who's not interested. I keep trying to define the terms of what has to happen in 2020 and how grave the problem is by saying it's not okay just to get 51 votes in the Senate. We've got to dare to dream big enough to expand the majority in the House. And that means not running candidates against other, you know, not primarying Democrats. That means running.
No.
That means running candidates against Republicans. And it means making a concerted balls to the wall effort to knock down as many of those 20 Republicans as we possibly can, starting with Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn.
Yeah.
Despite what Michael Cohen said, running that goddamn Trump right out of office. And as the Senate considers the legislation that the House sent over disapproving of the state of emergency, I hope somebody will stand up in the well of the Senate and say, folks, might want to pay attention. Michael Cohen testified the other day that he expects that Donald Trump will not peaceably leave office if he's defeated in 2020. Now, right. If you're a Republican inclined to vote against this resolution, I would ask you to think again. Because if that is the case, and that man worked with him for 10 years and has as good an insight into his character as anyone, if he says he won't leave peacefully, then letting that man have the vast emergency powers of a national emergency means that we will be kissing our form of government goddamn goodbye.
I'm worried, Bob. I know you have to go. And I want to add one more person to this that we've not heard from. And this person followed Donald Trump for at least a year, every day, almost all day. And that's Tony Schwartz. He's the one who really wrote The Art of the Deal. He's the ghostwriter for this book. And I don't know. I think I heard him say somewhere he had a degree in psychology. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he doesn't. You know, a lot of people do, whatever. But I'm just saying, he was there. He knows. And he told us early on, this is a terrible thing. No.
You're fine. But the bottom line is we'd best take this threat seriously. But I am going to end on a happy note because I'm looking at something here.
Is it food?
Yeah, we got to have some food porn to go out on, right?
All right.
I got a note from Tom in the Bay Area last night telling me to keep an eye on the mailbox because something would be coming my way. I have here, Tom said he was afraid that maybe my habit wouldn't be supported, and he didn't want me jonesing.
Is it yuzu?
No. I have handmade farmer's market hot sauce from the Bay Area.
It is hot sauce, though.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this one is Tierra Hot Sauce Ancho Ghost.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And the ingredients list is exactly the way I like it. You know, we talked about if it says water first, it means there's rehydrated peppers involved.
Right.
Ingredients, chilies, vinegar, kosher salt, citric acid. That's the Tierra Ancho Ghost.
I'm going to pull that up.
It's from Tierra Farms. Let's see. You want to TierraVegetables.com. T-I-E-R-R-A, vegetables.com. This stuff, however, is Green Scotch Bonnet Hot Sauce.
Oh, shit. Yo, wait.
By Leon Day's Condiments of San Rafael, Sunny San Rafael. The label says, Stinger, this is the ultimate journey into hell. The hot pepper Guiana, also known as Fireball, hot sauce for taste and heat. So be macho. Look for better. Look for hotter. Keep looking. Enjoy the challenge. And a big thank you. And you know, when individuals get when individuals get credits on the side of the bottle, you know it's serious. A big thank you to Kevin Davis for growing the great peppers. Well done. And this stuff is swamp water green.
You better be careful with that, Bob.
And then this. I have never heard tell of this. I can't wait to try it. I don't know how to use it. Maybe Tom will tell me. From Tierra Vegetables as well, salt-preserved chili. Ingredients, kosher salt and chili. It's like a little cake. It's wet, it's in a jar, and it's a little cake of yellow chili pepper and salt. That's all it is, ground up chili and salt.
Is it spreadable?
Woo, Jesus. I just smelt it. This is, I mean, it's almost like it's dry. So you'd maybe use it like little, you know, little scrapings or, you know, just, you know, with a fork instead of drops like a liquid.
Right. Okay.
Like some sort of habanero wasabi from hell.
Damn. Okay. Like a paste almost.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, it is. It's like, yeah, it's like a paste.
Wow, that sounds beautiful. Oh, that you on the road, man. Get your gallbladder all cleaned out. That shit works.
Oh, I think it would probably sandblast my sinuses.
Man, you'll be good to go. You'll be like a 65 Chevy.
Yep, small block V8 and a 4-barrel carb.
Oh, man. But seriously, I know you want to end them. Okay, yeah. Let me see. What good food? Oh, there's been so much good around here.
Well, we got one more brutal cold snap coming, and after that, I'm thinking it's time to start fire up the smoker.
Now, are you going to fire up the grill and the smoker at the same time? I'm just asking.
Well, no. I meant fire up the smoker, not fire up the grill.
Okay, I mean the flat, because you have a flat grill now, right?
Well, yeah, I've got that little portable propane affair, and that's what we're going to make the chicken fall curry on.
Oh shit!
And who knows, but what some of this might come in handy for that, especially the paste there. Woo.
Man, you can make fajita. I mean, there's so much. Every time I think about a flat griddle, I'm just thinking about peppers and onions slowly.
Oh yeah, with like some nice sausages sort of simmering away among the vegetables.
Yes, there's always something for everyone when you have that. It's like, oh, okay, you ready now? You know, when you're entertaining. Oh my God. Well, food will keep us together if we can keep the food. At least our president got back from North Korea without causing a war.
Well, Seth Meyers said something, I think, last night. He said, how ironic. He finally works up the courage to go to Vietnam, and he's getting killed in the United States. He was speaking, of course, metaphorically, Agent Fred. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want any, no, yeah.
Hey, Todd, you have yourself a good night, brother.
Take care. You too, man. Take care.
All right, later. Bye now. Our buddy Todd Collins from South Carolina, Stan. What's that obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening from Lee in New York? Remember when Data was going to be disassembled to be a prototype for a series of androids? When slaves were compared to farm equipment, it reminded me of the trial of Data's independence. When Riker did not want to prosecute, the judge said that she would declare that Data is like a toaster. That's the only way people can support slavery. Slaves are not people. They're just things that you own. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of the program this evening. And we are now at the end of Fundraising Free Radio, sadly. But again, there's a $200 challenge beginning tomorrow. well, not big, for tomorrow, Friday on the front porch. And if you want in on a challenge, this is the time to jump in. Shirley's Memorial Challenge will be coming around. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of you who subscribe. Thanks to all of you who pitch in during the week and during the month. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, celebrating 20 years at the point of the spear in the human rights struggle against mountaintop removal coal extraction in Appalachia. Little program note, I have to get up early in the morning and take the car for repairs. I don't plan to miss tomorrow night. I plan to be here. But I figured I should probably mention that in case anything does get weird. But I do. I plan to be here. I hope you will as well for Friday on the front porch. If anything's different, I will send. I'll put things up online on social media, Facebook, Twitter, what have you. And you can always check headon.live for my latest, the latest in my Twitter feed, and it'll show up there too if there's anything. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.